door to the small apartment slammed open. "Abigail! Abigail! Pack your bags. We're heading to California." Abigail's father, Cecil, stood in the doorway, wide-eyed, looking at his pocket watch, his hand still on the door. He'd come in on more than one occasion making proclamations of moving from New York, but they still hadn't left. Mostly it was due to frustration with his job combined with his father's dislike for the big city. To be fair, her father had always been eager to head out west. He had read far too many news stories about what was happening back there. Abigail, on the other hand, was comfortable and had no intention of leaving New York.
"Didn't you hear me? We need to pack up and go, honey."
He pushed the watch back into his vest pocket.
"The train leaves in 3 hours. We need to get to the station."
Her father produced 2 train tickets from his coat pocket and waved them before her, slapping them down on a small table by the front door. He then took off his hat, tossed it at the hat rack, missing by more than his normal amount.
"Father, we've been through this before. Honestly, California? It's barely even a state. And the railroad, it doesn't go all the way. They don't think it'll be completed until 1870, at the earliest. What are we going to do? Get off at the end of the line and wait another 5 years before they finish?"
"We don't have time to discuss that now. I just need you to get ready. We're leaving."
"I don't have time to pack my things."
"I have movers coming. They'll pack all your things and make sure it meets us in California. Everything should be there about a month after we get there."
"What about my schooling? I'm only 14. My teachers will frown on my leaving school now."
"Honey, please, just start packing. We're wasting time. We really should be discussing this all on our way." Her father had already gotten out one of the large suitcases from under the bed and had begun dumping drawers of clothes into it. Abigail didn't move. He couldn't expect her to just get up and start moving at the drop of a hat. She had a life here. Friends, school, her lab. She couldn't pack up all she needed in a couple of hours.
She got up and took hold of his wrist to stop him.
Her father was a small man, and she stood nearly 3 inches taller than him, much like her mother had. She took a hold of his face and kissed his forehead, again like her mother always did, to calm his franticness. She needed to talk some sense into him.
"Father, California is a long way away. We can't just stop everything and head off to California. It'll take a couple of months to get there. What's the rush? You have work tomorrow."
"This is for work." That stopped her. Her father worked for Mr. Huntington for some years and knew a great deal about railroads, but he was far from being heavily involved in the Transcontinental Railroad. Mostly her father was involved in building more efficient locomotives. His work with steam engines bordered on brilliant.
"Why are you being sent to California?"
"It's the gold rush. I'm needed. Me! Imagine that! They need me there."
"Dad, the gold rush has been going on for more than a decade. Why do they need you there all of a sudden?"
Abigail sat on the bed.
"They're working on a new machine to harvest gold from the ground. They can't just pick up rocks from the ground or pan for gold. Mr. Huntington wants bigger machines to dig up more pay dirt. Finally, after all these years, this is my shot to impress him."
"I'm guessing you've done that already, Father, if he's sending you to California."
"Not only that, he's paying for the passage there, and he gave me $300 for moving expenses."
"Moving expenses? You mean we're going to stay there?" Abigail crossed her arms over her chest.
"Of course we're going to have to live there, honey. It's not like we can just hop back and forth from coast to coast."
"What about my lab?"
"It'll come across as well. I already stopped by the moving office and gave them our address, and the address for your lab. Even my lab is being moved. Mr. Huntington really wants me there, and is willing to pay for any of our needs to get us there. He said there's a lot more gold that they're not going to be able to get to."
"So he's moving there as well?"
"Heavens no. He's far too busy on this end. He wants me to send him daily telegraphs once I arrive to keep him up to date. I guess the person who went up before me has been killed or something."
"What? Or something? You mean you could be heading out there to die?"
"No, we're not going."
Abigail started to stand up. Her father put his arm on her shoulder and sat her back down.
"I'm not going out there to die, and I'll have you there to watch over me. Honey, ever since your mother passed away, I've always tried to do the best for you. This is something I've dreamed of for a long time, and it'll put both of us in a better position. I know you've got your life here, but just think about the opportunity out there. The competition won't be nearly as difficult as it is here, and you'll be able to make new friends, and I'll make sure you have any technology available to you for your new lab. You just have to ask for it, and I'll make sure you have it."
"You only have $300, Father. How are you going to buy new equipment for me?"
"I have an expense budget. I'll need your help when I'm building the machinery. When we put the new equipment into production, I'll be part of the profit sharing. Most of the guys that are working out there already get a weekly wage. I'll get a percentage. Honey, this could make us rich. There's gold in them thar hills. Cecil laughed. Unfolding her arms, Abigail reached up and straightened her father's bow tie. I still don't like it. Mother would never approve. I'm not asking for your mother's approval. I'm really not asking for your approval, just your understanding. She'd only ever lived in New York. Sure, they'd gone outside the city on vacation, but 6 years ago, they'd lost Mom. They didn't even visit the cemetery where Elaine Chamsky had been buried. It was then Abigail set up her own lab off the side of her father's workshop. For 6 years, she'd either taught herself how to build things or asked for her father's help. Both of them became obsessed in their own way and poured themselves into their endeavors. He, with his massive steam-powered engines, her, with much smaller machines that usually had no purpose other than entertaining her. What did they really have to lose? Sure, she had friends, but none that she would call close friends. Acquaintances, really. More interested in parties and clothes and, to a lesser extent, school and boys. None of them would even come to visit her in her lab. They felt it was beneath them to get their delicate fingers dirty. Perhaps this was what they needed. As excited as he was, this was likely what would break her father out of a 6-year funk that had nearly consumed his life. This was, after all, the first time he'd shown real excitement about leaving the city. She couldn't remember the last time he looked this happy. Could she really be a stickler and take away this happiness? She was young. She could adapt. Not only that, she could expand her lab. Abigail smiled. That's my girl, Cecil said, and he hugged her harder. California, here we come. Deciding to leave her dresses in the wardrobe and only pack pants and shirts helped immensely. It took her less than an hour to get everything packed, and she left her father in the charge of packing up the rest of the apartment. She needed to make sure she would have time to get to the shop and finish packing up some more items. She also wanted to stop by the store and pick up some things she was certain would be difficult to find once they arrived in California. A girl had her needs, after all. The lab, little more than a walled-off section in her father's workshop, was only 10 blocks down the street from their apartment. It really didn't hit her until she was halfway there that she told her father she'd meet him at the train station at 3:15 p.m. Even though she didn't have a watch, there were many clocks on several buildings. This was not only the last time she'd walk down the street to her lab, this was also the last time she'd leave the apartment. For the next month, it would be somewhere different each night until they arrived in Sacramento. They were heading for the wild country. For the most part, the gold rush had happened. Many miners had either left or started working for larger companies. Her father wouldn't be a miner, but a builder. He was going to build gold mining equipment. Sure, he knew a lot about steam engines and locomotives, but mining equipment? He didn't have the first clue what went into mining. Hey, Abby, one of the men who worked for her father called out as she entered the workshop. She had hoped to enter and leave unnoticed, but a girl entering a dark workshop wearing a bright yellow dress while dragging a large red wagon with a small crate upon it was hard not to be noticed. She was surprised she had heard him over the clanging of hammers and steel. Hello, Lou. Several of the men stopped working to look at her. Most of them she knew. A couple of them made her nervous. Lou Burton was one of the nicest men in her shop. What her father lacked in physical presence, Lou more than made up for. The man stood a good 6'7" and was as large as the locomotive he worked on. Her father was the brains. Lou was the brawn. The man's massive arms were covered with grease up to the elbows, as were his overalls and face. I hear you and your daddy are leaving us. It's sad to see you two go. You'll be missed around here. Yes, we're off to California. Mr. Huntington has a job waiting for him out there. I would stay, but I couldn't let him head out there all by himself. Who would take care of him? Lou laughed. There's a good daughter. I only wish my little one would grow up to be like you. I didn't think I'd see you, so I left a little something in your lab. I hope you don't mind. Your daddy told me that he was having it packed up to go with you. I'd give you a hug, but, well... Abigail produced a handkerchief from her sash and reached up and cleaned a spot on his cheek. He leaned down, and she gave him a kiss, leaving a lipstick mark inside the clean area. He smiled. Thank you. You be sure to take care of your daddy. He's a smart man, but something tells me he'll get himself into trouble out there. And thank you, Lou. I'll be sure to take care of him. The clanging resumed as soon as Lou turned around. She made her way through the stacks of machinery and various states of assembly in the corner to where her lab sat. Several pieces of wood had been nailed together to make two walls and a roof. Even the door had been put together by scraps of wood. Lou, once he had heard that someone had broken into her lab and stolen something, had reinforced the walls and the door and even installed the lock. She took out the key and opened the door. She would leave the key with Lou when she left. Opening the door caused sliders to drop from the windows on the outside walls. One let light in from the alley, while the other exposed her lab to the rail yard. Either a cat or a dog scrambled out of the alley, knocking over a stack of boxes as it ran. The light fell on her workbench, with several projects in various states of build. Those that she completed were under the bench. She opened the crate and shifted around some straw inside. One by one, she put in her creations. They consisted mostly of hammered brass or steel riveted together and bound with leather straps. The internal mechanics were the smallest gears and cogs she could find in the discarded pile of scraps around her lab. Only once had she actually gotten into trouble for making something. Each item she placed inside, taking special care with a pair of glass orbs that were attached to a long brass rod. The glass orbs allowed her to collect static charge, while the brass rod allowed her to discharge it. It's quite likely that's why the animal in the alley had bolted. They'd been surprised on more than one occasion by her experiments. Abigail took up straw from the floor to cover the items placed inside. Looking at the spare tools, most either broken or poorly patched, she decided that she'd ask her father for newer tools once they reached California. If Mr. Huntington was sending them, then she deserved something from the bargain. Something sparkly caught her eye. Sitting in the middle of her workbench, among her projects was a silver locket. The front had a rose engraved upon it, while the back had a series of gears. Opening the locket, one side, with the rose, was a picture of her mother looking excited, but a little bit nervous. On the opposite side was a picture of her father, looking much the same. Tears quickly filled her eyes as she realized this was a picture from her mother and father on their wedding day. Even though she'd never visited her mother's gravesite since the day she was buried, Abigail felt a sudden need to go and see her. Two loud chimes sounded from a far-off clock. She had only an hour before she needed to make her way to the train station. Thankfully, the stores she needed to stop at were located near the train station. Rather than call Lou, she put the key on the workbench. He was busy yelling at someone, and the clanging had stopped once again. He looked her way and waved. She pointed to the open door of her lab, and he nodded. She knew he'd take care of anything she'd left behind. The wagon, now heavier, was a little more difficult to pull along. Fortunately, not many people were on the street to get in her way, so once she got it moving, she didn't have to worry about running anyone down. The first store she needed to stop at, if she remembered correctly, would be Donnington's Boots and Bodices. If she was headed into the wilds of California, she wanted to make sure she had appropriate footwear. A man wearing a tight tan suit with brown stripes stood in the middle of the walk, almost as if he were going to stop her. He took the bowler off his balding head and held it at his side as he watched her rapidly approaching. "I can't stop this thing. I suggest you get out of the way." Abigail wanted to be polite, but the man didn't appear to be concerned with her current rate of speed. "Sir, you'll have to step aside." The closer she got, the more fidgety the man became until he finally stepped aside. He held up a finger as if to get her attention, but said nothing. Abigail gave a glance back at the man, who frowned and put his hat back on his head. She gave him no more thought as she continued on her way, doing her best to warn off men, women, children, animals, that all seemed to be becoming stupefied as she made her way down the walk with the wagon now in tow. After making her stops for boots, pants, shirts, underclothes, and niceties, as well as a good supply of hard candies and chocolates, Abigail started on her way to the train station. It wasn't even 3 o'clock, and she still had $6 left over from the money her father had given her. She decided to make one last stop to see if she can bargain for a small rivet gun and a fair amount of rivets. The ones from the train station had always been too large and made finer work difficult. Abigail stopped to gain her bearings. As she did, the man in the tight tan suit with the brown stripes started across the street. He held up a hand and waved to her. She didn't know this person and had no intention of talking to him. What could he possibly want with her in the first place? Miss, please, I must speak with you about your father. He's in grave danger. Miss! So the boss decided to send the sniveling little worm. Of course, Lou had probably put in a good word for him. That was just like Lou to overlook anything anyone except Cecil Chamsky did. If Reginald Sneller had his way, Cecil would have fallen victim to an accident long ago. Instead, they had all conspired to send off the weakest member of the team. Sure, Cecil could navigate a blueprint and design some fancy machines, but when it came to the hard part of putting something big together, Reginald and Lou did the hard work. Not if you ask Lou. Lou always took all the credit for getting a job done. He even knew how to get on Cecil's good side, but playing nice-nice with the little girl, that was just taking the game a little too far. After seeing Cecil's little girl leave, it was time to get out of the rail yard. He just had to get away from Lou. The man always liked to yell and holler when one of those two were around. It was almost as if Lou wanted nothing more than to impress them in an effort to get to Mr. Huntington's attention. Nothing more than a grunt worker, Lou would never be anything more than a foreman, a common worker. Reginald, on the other hand, had dreams, aspirations, and expectations. If it hadn't been for Cecil, he would have been the one in charge of designing the new locomotives to travel across the country. Sure, it was still a few years away, but there was a lot of testing that needed to be done. There had been time for sabotage of Cecil's design, and Reginald had already started his planning, but two things stopped him. One was Lou's constant presence, and his need to constantly look over each worker's shoulder from the bending, the fitting, the riveting. The man had been everywhere, almost as if it had been his own design they were building. The other had been Cecil's sudden notice that he was departing for California. There were no secrets that Mr. Huntington had gold claims in California. Most of the men involved in the Big Four had their own gold claims. What was a secret and a surprise was that he wanted someone to go to California to do some work. Reginald dropped his token into the time clock. Gears turned, and the hand with his name moved from working to not working. Every morning he would normally place a token in the machine to start the day, but tomorrow would be different. He'd spent a great deal of time not only spying on the old man, but he had also taken a small item here, a tool there, and stored away a good sum of money. When he'd found out the job could potentially open in California, he had packed all the things he needed, sold what he didn't, and waited for the announcement. Then he watched as Mr. Huntington and Cecil spoke and saw the light in Cecil's eyes. Right then he knew the job that should have been his had gone to someone else. A vow had to be made, one to make sure that Cecil Chamsky became discredited, fired, and gone. That would leave a void for Reginald Sneller to step in. A clock somewhere chimed three times. Reginald quickened his pace and headed to the train station. Everything he needed had been stored there, just waiting for this day, and even if the job wasn't his, he wasn't going to miss the opportunity. The train was going to leave at 3:15 p.m. Reginald pushed his way past several people. If it hadn't been for Lou's insistence, he'd have been gone and sitting in his seat already. He'd have time to clean up on the way. Sure, he didn't have the expense budget that Cecil likely got to afford a private cabin on the train, but there were still facilities. The train whistle blew, signaling 10 minutes before pullout. Now Reginald started to run. He wasn't going to miss the train. He had to make that train. It seemed as if people knew he was in a hurry and deliberately got in his way, preventing him from going even faster. He stepped into the street and nearly got run down by a mounted officer. "Slow down there, son. The train isn't pulling out for several more minutes. Just have your ticket ready. People run late all the time. Most people don't have a date on the other side of the country. Fancy yourself a 49er, do you? I'm afraid there isn't much gold left to be had out there. I've heard that you've heard wrong." Reginald pushed the horse's head and continued his run towards the train station. The officer yelled something, but he didn't care. He needed to get into his locker, collect his things, and get on the train. The crush of pedestrians eased as he entered the train station. The clock on the wall read 3:09. He still had time. He put his hands in his right pants pocket. Empty. He tried his left pants pocket. Also empty. This couldn't be. This just couldn't be. He had to have the key. He checked his jacket pocket. He checked his back pockets. He checked. The train whistle blew. 5 minutes before pullout. 5 minutes and he didn't have his key. Cecil was sure to be on the train already. The smug little man was going to get a head start. It wasn't fair. It just wasn't fair. Reginald rushed to the lockers. Number 9. It had all his worldly goods in it. The clothes he'd need. His money. All his money was in there. He had to get inside the locker and get into the train. He just had to. Nothing like a small, thin piece of metal was going to get in his way. He kicked the locker and the door bent inward. He kicked it again. And again. As he reached down to pull the locker open, a meaty hand grabbed his shoulder. "What do we have here?" Reginald spun around to see the mounted officer. "Let me go. This is my locker." "And why wouldn't you be using this?" The officer held up a small key. "Where did you get that? Give me that key." "I tried to stop you and tell you it fell out of your pocket, but you were in such a hurry. Now look what you've gone and done." He pointed to the bent locker. "You've gone and destroyed public property. I'm afraid you'll have to come along with me."
No, you don't understand."
"Oh, I understand. You need to catch this train. You should have kept that in mind before you went and kicked in the locker here. You're going to spend the night in jail. If the train station doesn't want to press charges, you can catch the next train in the morning. Come along now." This couldn't be happening. Not here, not now, not when he was so close. He looked at the officer, holding the locker key. He thought for a moment of knocking the officer down and taking the key. That would never work. The train would just be held up so he could be dragged off. He thought about bribing the officer, even going so far as to open his mouth to start to say something. "Now think long and hard before you say something, son. You're already in enough trouble." Reginald closed his mouth. "That's better. Now, move along. Let's get you down to the police station." As Reginald started for the exit, he saw Cecil and his little girl rushing inside. Cecil carried two large suitcases, and the girl pulled an oversized wagon. They either didn't see him standing there or didn't care, for Cecil collided with Reginald, knocking him down, and the wheels of the girl's wagon ran over his legs. Reginald yelled in pain, "Stop them!" "What's that?" the officer asked, as if he hadn't seen anything. "Aren't you going to do anything about that? I've been assaulted. Stop those two!" "I've already have my hands full with one. I would have difficulty stopping one more person, let alone two more people." "Can't you call someone? I'm hurt. You need to stop those two." "I'm already thinking about all the paperwork I'll be filling out once I take you in." "I'm sorry. I'm really sorry about the locker. Please, there's still time. Please, officer, you must let me on the train." The final whistle blew. A conductor yelled, "All aboard!"